Go ahead.
Ken Oppenheimer, Deputy Executive Director for Passenger Systems Program Directorate.
Okay, let's start with just an overview of the applications that your particular division operates, who they're deployed to, and some sense of the size and scale of your enterprise applications.
Fair question, Tom. So Passenger Systems deals with every application you can imagine dealing with a traveler entering or exiting the United States, right? We have a portfolio of roughly 90 plus different applications that we operate, support, and have out in the field to support the mission. Whether it's land, sea, or air entry, whether it be on the primary, the initial entry point into the U.S., or even some of the systems that we deal with on the back end. We have a cadre of benefit programs that CBP has for the trusted travelers that expedite their entry into the United States, like the Global Enrollment Program or the Trusted Traveler Program, all those public benefit programs that we have out there as well. We have Global Entry, it's probably another one you're familiar with, the kiosks at the airport that allow you to kind of skip to the front of the line. So it's a large portfolio. It keeps us busy and it keeps us up at night, I would say.
Yeah, I'm familiar with some of them, and they do work well, at least the Global Entry. And, well, it's safe to say then that the users of the applications are pretty much all of the above. It's the general flying public or traveling public. It's people coming into the United States from other countries for immigration purposes. It could also be other government agencies touching this.
Oh, absolutely. You're spot on. The actual, you know, the keyboard jockeys are going to be the CBP employees, obviously. But the role of their mission is to vet those folks coming into and leaving to ensure safety of the U.S.
And it's probably fair to say those applications are what they used to call bursty. That is to say that they're sometimes when they're super active and sometimes when they're almost latent by calendar or clock.
They are, right? Depending upon the... Yeah, yeah. You know, several years ago, we know if something goes down, it's going to be pretty publicly visible, whether it be through social media or whether it be through TV channels. So we do our absolute best to ensure that we have some level of due diligence and resiliency built into those applications so that does not occur.
And do you operate a garden variety of code bases and so forth? I mean, these were not all developed as one by the same contractors and the same people. So maybe discuss the variety of code bases and the integrative challenges that you have with them.
Yeah, I mean, we're primarily a Java shop, right? And there are some different flavors for different reasons. A lot of these applications have been around for a period of time. We're actually pretty fortunate, right, going through our current cloud migration process where we were forced to refactor applications that were legacy and bring them more into the current century. That was a benefit to us. It took us a little bit of time, but we were forced to do it, which was a good thing at the end of the day. That gives us, again, that resiliency I mentioned earlier.
But there is interoperability and calls among the applications. They do have some degree of integration at some point in their uses, fair to say?
Sure, and not just within our space, right? We have other parts within the CBP OIT arena where we share data. Right, we share data calls from one application to the other because sometimes that additional information may be needed.
And what kind of testing do you do then for especially the performance and integrative aspects of this? How it, I guess maybe talk about it from the life cycle of development through deployment.
Yeah, so testing is always something that's kind of a passion for mine, right? And automating that is always something I strive to get to. About 7 years ago, I really made it a priority for our group. And it grew slowly, but I think we've got the rock over the top of the hill and we're gaining ground quickly. Test automation is the only way we're going to get to a fashion of development where we can get into a CI/CD process and getting those quicker builds out to development, knowing that they're going to meet the mark. I understand, and you know, you probably understand, that you're never going to get to 100% automation. There are just pieces and parts of that testing, whether it be, I'll say, biometric fingerprints on a scanner, that are really hard to do in an automated process. Maybe in the future, that's going to become a capability we can adopt. But testing is always a big part, and especially with 98 applications. You would need an army to do all that manually. And we've definitely recognized and realized the business benefit to getting into that space.
And how does knowledge of what the application will eventually do and the other applications with which it will interoperate, or even just call back and forth, affect how you go about development? Does that need back up to the development stage?
It does. I mean, you can't work in a bubble. You do have to understand the calls that the application makes. You do have to fully understand the business requirements that we're trying to develop and put in there. Without that level of knowledge, I think it's going to take a lot longer. We do have some folks that fortunately have been around for a while, right? And they have that SME level ability to communicate to the teams that work for them on what it means, right? This is the impact of the requirement. This is where we have to go look. This is what we have to develop and put in place.
And how do you do testing, again, concentrating on the development stage, without making your developers nuts? Because they don't always like being tested.
Right. And doing it in an agile fashion, right? You're trying to write your test cases in, you know, we use Selenium, writing that alongside the same time that the developer is writing his code. We are not as mature as we want to be, where we can write those in the same sprint. We're typically about a sprint behind. But it does afford us the ability to do a full regression suite before that release. Right. So if we're talking functional, at least, you know, maybe we have to do part of that manual. But we know before that release, we can press a button and we run it several times a week for everything, that we can go back and capture if there are any defects or bugs that need to be addressed.
And once deployed, software does require continuous testing also, doesn't it? Because it's always being patched or updated. Talk about the life cycle aspect of testing.
Yeah, patching's a fun thing, right? It keeps us on our toes. It's good when we have a little more control over it versus, you know, Microsoft is our friend. They definitely produced a lot of patching that we have to deal with. We have to stay abreast of what's coming and understand and find the time to get through that. Automation, I sound redundant, I think, when I say it, but is our key to success. Being able to use that as a solution set has been a lifesaver for us.
And you mentioned Microsoft, but they're really part of a whole suite of suppliers that almost every agency has that may support the operation of your data centers or your cloud instances. They're not your applications, but they enable the applications to run. And those companies issue updates sometimes on their own schedule, and they can break your application or break the calls among applications. And you don't have any necessarily control over when they issue those patches automatically through the cloud. How do you deal with that? And can you maybe have some kind of an anticipatory test so that you make sure you're ready?
I think fortunately within our enterprise, we do have control over that, right? We do not allow Microsoft to push on their schedule. We get those in-house. We do package them. We do test them before they are deployed out to all the endpoints. So we get that ability to address that.
And the applications you mentioned, those 90, then those are CBP-owned applications. They're not SaaS, software as a service type cloud applications adapted for CBP.
You're correct. Now, there are other software as a service applications within CBP, but just not under my AOR.
Got it. So therefore, when someone is updating one of those applications, someone within CBP or someone, you know, one of your contractors, the same kind of idea applies. You have to anticipate when they're going to issue a patch or an update because of the dependencies among the other applications?
Sure. And that would go through our standard change control process, right? And when you handle that process, it's part of its purpose and intent is for communication to allow folks to understand here's what's coming. You know, you got a window of 2 weeks. Go test it, make sure it's not gonna break anything because we're gonna push it.
Right. And you mentioned that the uniformity, so to speak, of the Java code that you have and the interoperability is the result of a modernization effort that kind of got everything rationalized into Java. Did I hear that correctly, so that you're not running legacy code so much anymore?
Yeah, I mean, Java is a flavor of development that the majority of apps run on. We made that decision when we came off the mainframe, right, to go in that direction. That was the best and latest, greatest thing out there. And it's still really a strong platform to run. So that has allowed us to get into that space. And I think a lot of OIT, don't quote me on that one, but I think a lot of OIT is running in the same arena.
Sure. And so what is your strategy now for modernizing the application base you do have, such that, you know, 10 years down the line, you don't wake up and there's fresh technical debt that you solved right 10 years ago?
Yeah, and I think we're still thinking through that process, right? Our focus right now is on cloud migration, getting out of our on-prem data center. We've within the 90 plus applications, we have, I think, all but two of the user interface side up in the cloud. We have about four databases left to go. We're going to wrap that up. And then I think once complete, then is going to be the opportunity to really sit down and think about a roadmap on what is the next generation. And we need to figure out what that timeline looks like as well.
And that brings up the idea then that as you do these future modernizations and working with the cloud, you're dealing with services that are provided by the clouds. And yeah. I guess every agency makes a decision on which services it will support its applications with, whether its own or cloud-provided services. What's your decision tree on that one?
Yeah, so we're going with a service provider, and you know, we've realized the benefit of doing that. Our uptime has significantly improved, and that's, you know, that's always a good thing for the customer and the mission space we're in. So I think we benefit from going in that direction.
And CBP applications, I mean, envisioning them, like any other application, they're highly networked because if you're at ports of entry or you're on ship channels, you know, where they come and go, docks or airports, it's locally deployed. What's the architecture? I mean, is every transaction a reach back to the cloud? Are there local instances that are synced later? How does that all work?
No, there's nothing local, right? They're calling back to the cloud through various network providers, whether it be your big telecoms, whether it be even Starlink, right? Because we have some of those locations out in the middle of somewhere where you can't get a signal. Some stations even have microwave shots. So we have to deploy a variety of solutions to ensure that the connectivity is there.
And does the testing and the automated program that you have, does that extend to the communication links?
It does. In our non-production regions, we still call up to the clouds, right? So we have a mirror of production, maybe not to the size, scope, and complexity of a production production environment, but we use the same path so we can understand if there is any latency that we may need to deal with.
And then applications use databases, and let's talk for a minute about those, because there's APIs and different applications access different databases. I imagine, given the traveling public or the immigration public or whatever subset of population that you're dealing with, they all have databases associated with them. Talk about the interdependencies there and how you make sure the databases are always available.
I think it's the same concept, right? We are migrating right now from an Oracle shop to a Aurora Postgres. up in the cloud, and we get the same design architecture up there. It's the challenge is figuring out how to move the big databases up to the cloud, right? Get that ability to move the data and also have a change data capture concept so you can keep everything in sync.
So when applications are operating, calling back to the cloud, then you want the data in the cloud too eventually.
Can you say that one more time? We broke up a little bit, yeah. Probably on my side.
Yeah, I was okay. Since all of your applications are running back and forth from the cloud, each one of them has to call on a database. You're moving databases all into the cloud such that it will be intra-cloud communications instead of for a database maybe at a CBP data center?
Right. I mean, we were all on-prem at a CBP data center, and now we're going to have all our databases in the same cloud. So we're going to have that same interoperability within that environment.
And the advantage there is what? Less data motion and cost? And is there a performance aspect to it also?
We haven't seen any performance problems or impact there. I think what you get is redundancy, right? At an easier solution and failover capability. If you need to expand on a search, you can do it that way and then shrink back down. So you get the more flexibility than we would have owning the metal in our own shop.
And what are getting to the application performance again, where we started? How do you establish metrics? What are some of the metrics for the different applications? Is it milliseconds, seconds, or what?
Sure. I mean, you're going to measure SLAs in a variety of different ways, right? You're going to look for uptime, downtime, response time, volume. Just there's a cadre of different metrics you're going to want to follow, all to be forward-leaning on understanding the performance of your application.
And do you have any green field or any new developments that you're anticipating? What's in the pipeline?
Oh, there's probably a lot in the pipeline right now. It's kind of hard to pick one out. But everybody's talking AI, right? So we're trying to understand how that's going to impact us and where we are going to benefit from that going down the road.
Okay. Anything else I should?